Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic. And I want to welcome you to today's special topic, which is about archetypes. And this is a very fundamental topic of Jung. And a topic I've talked about before, like many, many years ago, but over the years, like my understanding changed and adapted to the topic so that I wanted to talk about it again. And it has a lot to do with human nature and also collective psychology. It has to do with mythology. And we learned today a little bit about inflation. And I will show a lot of quotes by Jung, which can be really, really insightful. And they're really drawn from this huge corpus of Jung. So letters and the seminars and essays he's written. And yeah, it will be a presentation by me for roughly 45 minutes. And we would start with the archetypes, or as Jung called them, living ideas. And we will explore why he called them living ideas. So when you go through all the texts where Jung talked about archetypes, and he has a book about that, even called Archetypes and the Collective Unconscious, there will be certain characteristics that will crystallize out. That in that context, he talks about archetypes, or he mentions archetypes. And he sees archetypes very closely associated with nature. So something not necessarily human, but something as fundamental as the weather or salt or the sun. But in a psychological sphere, so in the inside world, not necessarily the outside world, even though there might be a slight overlap, which we will also talk about. But he says archetypes are living ideas. They're a little bit like animals. So they're from nature. They're also kind of impersonal. They're autonomous. And they're morally indifferent, the same way how the sun or a lion would be morally indifferent. They are, they act, they express themselves. And they're also absolutely integral for our psychic well-being and how we are working internally in our psyche and how we're constituted, how we develop, how we live our lives. And a very, very important point that I want to already mention is there's an interplay between the archetype and our consciousness. So we, in our consciousness, we are in a kind of upper part of the psyche, or let's say more outer part of the psyche. And when we go deeper into the psyche and the more structural, fundamental thing, there we find archetypes. And archetypes kind of get activated through specific images or situations. Something within us becomes active and acts then through us. And this is an archetype, and this is what this event will be about. And Jung associates archetypes also very much with an image and an emotion. So again, something that can be outside, like an image, but also an emotion which is inside of us. This already sounds a little bit complicated. And this has a reason, and this is like a fundamental, let's say, problem with understanding Jung. Jung has multiple definitions for the same term that he's using. So I went into the text and tried to see where he uses archetypes and in what way he uses archetypes. And this is why I broke it down into three different definitions. The first one is really this image aspect. This is actually how Jung started to say, like, oh, there are certain images that pop up again and again in human culture when people produce art, when they, let's say, formulate or manifest something, or they concretize something, may it be a sculpture or a story or a painting, that there are certain images that pop up again and again. And the image can be that, for example, of the hero. I have here the picture of Hercules, who did heroic things and got known for that. He did a lot of good. He fought evil monsters, and he was very smart and could trick his opponents. And he would grow psychologically also in his journey. And we have a lot of stories with heroes. Like every culture has stories about heroes who do great deeds. So this is how Jung became aware, like, oh, this is a little bit weird. We have all these cultures that are separated through time and geography, but they come up again and again with kind of the same stories and use the same images. Another thing where Jung says this is an archetype is a pattern of behavior, where he says, oh, there are certain just steps, like mini dramas that play out, and they seem to play out always that way. And the example that he gives is, for example, falling in love. This is why I have this picture here of two people holding hands and watching the sunset, that when two lovers fall for each other, you can kind of watch it like a movie. It plays out and it has this structure of it. Oh, both don't know about each other yet, and there's misunderstandings, and there's a lot of emotion, and there's a lot of courtship behavior and all these different things. And it looks very interesting, and the people might not even be aware of it. And another thing where Jung talks about archetype, and this is not so much known, it's really a situation. An archetypal situation that happens in the outside, where this triggers something inside of us. And the image I show here is the death of King Arthur, describing the death of the king, or like the death of a leader figure, that a leader suddenly disappears. He dies or moves away or is kicked out. And a lot of stories we have are about that, right? Like Game of Thrones, it's okay, who will get the Iron Throne? Also, a lot of companies change fundamentally when the leader is suddenly gone. Very often a lot of people leave because they are very closely associated with that leader. And there's also a fight who will fill out that vacuum of the king that is now gone. You have it also in some fairy tales that, for example, the king dies and suddenly it stops to rain. So there's some disorder and order has to be organized again. And of course, a new king has to be found. So we have that in a lot of stories. But this is a situation that also then plays out in our daily lives. And this is something very important to understand. So archetypes are not something that happened thousands of years ago or hundreds of years ago. Archetypes happen every day and they happen to us. And Jung's understanding of archetypes is also an evolution, because he started with the images, but then he moved to this kind of pattern approach that he said, oh, it's actually kind of a kind of pattern that repeats. So when we look more into archetypal situations, it is really this falling in love or marriage or the descent into the underworld, which is super interesting when people go underground to do something, to find something out, to dig through stuff, that go undercover like a spy into enemy territory and so on. Or people being stuck in their lives. So when people are kind of depressed or do not see the way forward. This is in a way also then archetypal. Jung calls this the dark night of the soul. And of course then the hero being then also a kind of archetype that can be triggered within oneself when it's needed from the situation. There's an extreme situation and sometimes people rise up to the occasion that they go beyond themselves to do very heroic things. And Jung looked at all these things, so the artistic things, but also the human behavior, to find their commonalities and try to understand it, why people seemingly psychologically change in their behavior and also their understanding of the world. So Jung sees there this interplay of image and emotion. And you kind of have both to have an archetype. So an archetype is within us, but we want to express it outwards. But an archetype can also be outwards, and that causes something in us, an emotion that causes us to do things. So this is why he says here in the quote, there are both images and emotions. And one can only speak of archetype when these two aspects are present at the same time. And I have here a picture, which is quite interesting because it popped up at a lot of revolutions in Asia in the last year. This is from Indonesia, but also you have this in Nepal. This is the flag from One Piece, which is an anime. But the protesters that are generally young, go to these protests to fight police, to fight soldiers, and they bring this flag. And Jung would say this is not a coincidence. Something within them causes them to do that. And they do that, again, geographically separated at different places because it represents something. It stirs up something in them. It's about resistance. It's about, let's say, freedom. It's about rebellion and also energy. So this is then expressed in this flag. So someone came up with this story, created then all this imagery, and it speaks to people. So people pick it up and then use it in their own life, for example, when they try to overthrow their government. Similarly to the American flag, which also pops up quite often, for example, in the protests in Hong Kong. So there are certain images and certain emotions that are then intertwined. And Jung talks about that, that he says, archetypes are full of energy. Their human forms of life have a tremendous attraction and they grip one again and again if one doesn't look out. So an archetype does something with us. So it is in us, it does something with us, and we also experience it outside. And he says, archetypes have one really, really big advantage. They are not random. They are within us. They are in the collective part of our psyche. He has a very evolutionary approach. He says, there are certain situations that happened so often in the past that they became kind of ingrained in us. So when human beings are born, we're not empty. We already have these images, these patterns of behavior, these emotions within us. Every human being that is born has it, and then it expresses itself through that human being. And he says the very, very big advantage is that certain things happened so often in the past that we are kind of smarter than we know. It means that we in our consciousness, what we know, how we would describe ourselves to another person, like, this is my name, this is my age, these are the things I've been done, and these are the things I want to do. He says there's a more complete psyche below that that can be activated in the right situation. And this is what these quotes are about. They serve as an essential safeguard against situations in which one might lose one's composure. Whenever a panic situation arises, whether external or internal, the archetypes step in and help a person react in an instinctively appropriate way, as if they had always known the situation. They react the way humanity has always reacted. That is why this mechanism is vital. Meaning, we have the archetype of the hero because people acted heroically in the past. We have the archetype of a relationship because people got into relationships in the past. We have the archetypes of mother or father because people had mothers and fathers also in the past. So there's already an understanding, like a repertoire, a toolbox of behavior available to us, not necessarily actively, but it comes out at the right situations when it is needed. In the movie Castaway, where he gets stranded on an island and has to survive, and we kind of have that still in us, that we find a way how to survive in nature. And he's very proud when he makes fire. And this is, I think, a feeling everyone can associate with, especially men, when they make fire in the wild. There's this special numinous fascination about it, a quality. It speaks to something very integral within ourselves. So when we come to the ends of our wits, then the archetype begins to function. For since eternity, man has gone through situations with which he could not cope, where instincts had to step in and solve the situations, either in a cunning way or by a coup de force. Interestingly enough, Tom Hanks played in another movie called Sully, where he plays this pilot that saved the plane that crashed into the Hudson River in New York. And it was an absolutely crazy maneuver he did, and it worked out because he was highly, highly capable, but he also kept his calm because they got something activated inside of him. That's based on a real story. And you have that very often, that people rise to the occasion under circumstances and become then heroes. And these are the people we like to hear about and we tell stories about. So Jung sees there really an underlying pattern. It's not that we're talking about one hero or one relationship or one king that died, but rather it's a more like general pattern that is abstractly described. And it has a lot of expressions. It has a lot of different facets. So this is why there's this book of Joseph Campbell with the name Hero with a Thousand Faces. Like Luke Skywalker is a hero, Harry Potter is a hero, Neo is a hero. And they all have something in common, a common core. And Jung would describe that as then the heroic archetype. And this is then what we then can recognize. When we see someone who acts heroically, we associate them with the archetype of the hero. And I have a quote here that goes more on this pattern topic. The difficulty which gives rise to misunderstandings is that archetypes are real. That is to say, effects can be empirically established whose cause is described hypothetically as archetype. Meaning, we cannot measure archetypes directly. There's not a test, there's not a sensor for that, but rather we infer it by the images and the behavior that we've seen, that it matches very well to a certain pattern. Just as in physics, can be established whose cause is assumed to be the atom, which is merely a model. Nobody has ever seen an archetype, and nobody has ever seen an atom either. Of course, this is Jung in his time. Now we can see atoms to a certain degree, but the point there is real. Like, we have the concept and physics of atoms already for thousands of years, and people hypothesized about that without, let's say, the measured evidence, directly measured evidence of an atom, but we could see the effects. Similar about gravity. We see the effects of gravity, we see the effects of electricity. Those things, of course, we can measure more directly and better, but an archetype is then a kind of model that has an effect and that can be inferred that there is something that repeats and is constant, same as electricity or gravity, or atoms are then constant from material to material, for example. We can say then the same about archetypes, that we can say, oh, human beings have a repertoire of archetypes, so where there are human beings, there will be archetypal expression, there will be archetypal experiences for human beings. In that sense, it is then like a snowflake. Jung uses this example, and I have it here. A primordial image is determined as to its contents only when it has become conscious and is therefore filled out with the material of conscious experience. Its form, however, might perhaps be compared to the actual system of a crystal, which, as it were, performs the crystalline structure in the mother liquid, although it has no material existence of its own. So what Jung says about an archetype, it is a kind of structure, a structure that automatically assembles things. It assembles people, their behavior, images, emotions, and so on, in a certain configuration and specific way that repeats itself then. Similar as we have snowflakes, that when we have water on water molecules, you cannot really see the structure that then forms, but when we cool it down, suddenly it gets a form, a very fixed and very structured and orderly form, as in snowflakes. Like there's a certain structure that repeats two snowflakes. We say unique like a snowflake, but actually, snowflakes follow very, very strict patterns. And similar to that, archetypes. And this is then what Jung tries to elaborate on and try to describe these patterns that are within ourselves and that express themselves in our lives. And they express themselves in a huge degree in art. So I already brought examples from movies, I brought examples from mythology and other stories. So it is really that it seems to be when humans have the possibility to express themselves, they do it very often in an archetypal way. So I have here several quotes for that. The primordial image or archetype is a figure, may it be a diamond, a human being, or a process that constantly recurs in the course of history and appears wherever creative fantasy is freely expressed. And there are no inborn ideas, but there are inborn possibilities of ideas that set bounds to what even the boldest fantasy and keep our fantasy activity within certain categories. a priori ideas, as it were, the existence of which cannot be ascertained except from their effects. So here on the right, I have the example from Titanic with Rose and Jack. So the both unlucky lovers that cannot really stay together except for a very, very short time, like Romeo and Juliet. We have this story again and again and again. And people come up with these stories. They like these stories and they like to consume these stories. So we have there very much genres. We have romantic movies. We have horror stories. We have adventure stories. We have war. We have detective stories. And they all follow a kind of pattern, a kind of meta story that can be inferred. But even though that they follow quite rigid pattern, for example, a love story, they meet, they don't find together, then they are together, then they are brought apart again, and then they reunite or they are separated forever. We still like this story and to experience it again and again and again. So those people who can do this very well can become very rich, such as artists. And this is what Jung talks about here. Whoever speaks in primordial images speaks with a thousand voices. He enthralls and overpowers. And while at the same time he lifts the idea he is seeking to express out of the occasional and the transitionary into the reels of ever-enduring. So human beings will have love stories from now until forever. And we have them already in the past, and they will stay with us. And this is an insight into archetypes as they express. But Jung says archetypes are more than just human. He says, yes, we have them. Yes, we experience them. But actually, he says animals also have them. And I guess they're even easier for us to realize and to see in animals, because animals don't necessarily have a culture. They don't have a way of expressing or codifying things for people to learn. They don't write things down. So birds build nests, salmons swim upstream, and we have all this very, very complex behavior, which can only be explained by the fact that they already have this knowledge inside of them, these patterns of behavior, these instincts that they then act out if they want to get a partner or when they fight an enemy, when they explore new things. For example, mice and rats, they hate cats and the odor of cats, even though when they have never saw a cat themselves in their own life. And this is then this contrast in the psyche that we have. We have our own experience and our own life, everything we lived through personally, but in the background, we have this ancient knowledge that can be activated and help us. So it helps a rat a lot to be afraid of cats, even though that it personally met a cat before. So Jung talks about that. There's nothing to prevent us from assuming that certain archetypes exist even in animals, that they are grounded in the peculiarities of the living organism itself and are therefore direct expressions of life. He would even say that plants show certain patterns and behavior that they most certainly are not aware about, that look very, very beautiful, and that the plant itself is not necessarily aware about it, can perceive itself. There is no doubt that they possess archetypes, as the symbiosis between animals and plants clearly demonstrates this. And because there must be an inherited image within the animal, that prompts it to act in a certain instinctive manner. So male and females of the animals find together even though that they might have never seen each other before. And Jung sees a very, very big value for us and our psyche, that we are there to also connect with this part. Meaning, we as human beings have a very complex psyche, which has old parts, which has new parts, but in the end, everything has to play together. And this connection to the archetypes and this natural, let's say, prehistoric life is absolutely essential for our well-being in our daily lives. So he says, most of our psychological ills consist in the fact that we have deviated from the instinctive pattern of man. We suddenly find ourselves in the air, our tree no longer receives the nourishing substance from the earth. So you see, when you get back into an archetypal situation, you are in your right instinctive attitude, in which you must be when you want to live on Earth's surface, in your right atmosphere with your right food. The archetype is instinctive natural man, as he has always been. And he says, this is a very big problem today. We are very far removed from nature. We don't spend so much time in nature. And we are experiencing these archetypal situations, let's say, through movies and stories and music and all these different ways. But it's a completely different thing to act it out, to feel yourself to be driven then by this force from the unconscious to certain behavior. And he says there's also a kind of danger there when people are not aware of archetypes, that they can spring into action in a specific situation triggered by certain images, that it overwhelms the person and they start acting it out and are not aware, and they kind of then get driven. I think it's more easily for us to understand when we think about it in context of emotions, when we say, oh, anger took me over, fear took me over, bringing me to do things. It is, for Jung, even more complex with these dramas, like when we fall in love, that this can also be in a very, very horrible way. And this is where we then have to look out for archetypes, and that we can get caught in them, that we suddenly are compelled to act in a certain way, to show certain behavior, which is, but then again, very impersonal. So these archetypes from the collective part, they are very, very old. They're very historic. They have nothing really to do with us directly. So there's a very, very famous quote of Jung about it, where he talks about, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. And also, when a situation occurs which corresponds to a given archetype, that archetype becomes activated and a compulsiveness appears, which is like an instinctual drive, given its way against all reason and will, or else produces a conflict of pathological dimensions. And if you're on the right side, image from Tristan and Isolde, a very famous story from Great Britain about two lovers. It's a love story. It's supposed to be like one of the first modern love stories. And they are very much in love with each other, but they kind of do horrible things. So, for example, they fall so much in love with each other that they run away, even though he's a knight and he's a princess and he's actually supposed to be married away. And they kind of fake the wedding night of her husband to be with another person so that they can spend time together. And he dresses up in all these different costumes just to catch a glimpse. And there's also a situation where he thinks she has forgotten him, so he marries another girl who is also called Isolde because her name reminds him of her, but he does not get in a relationship with her. He does not sleep with her or become intimate. And later they run away and live in the woods from nothing and basically starve to death almost for 3 years in the forest. And it sounds all, let's say, romantic when you read it. But if people would start acting that out, and people do, they're then completely caught and they're completely in love with someone. And it's complete madness to act like Tristan and Isolde. And this is what Jung means. Like, you suddenly can become possessed by the hero archetype, or with a wise old man, or the father, or the mother, or whatever. But he says, well, that's not actually you. It's something inside of you. It's something that should be part of your life and that you need to kind of experience and act out in a good way. But if it's only that, if you're only that, you will have a horrible, horrible time. Imagine it's Tristan and Isolde, but they're not both in love with each other, but only one person. Then it becomes very creepy, it becomes very stalker, and it destroys the life of two people. So this is where Jung says there needs to be an awareness that people are acting beyond themselves, that they're acting out something which is highly impersonal and that drives their lives and kind of also damages their lives. The fact that's happening there, he calls inflation. Meaning, archetypes have a lot of energy because they're so instinctual. They're so deeply ingrained within ourselves. So we feel that when we watch a movie or we're in a story or we see in a situation, we feel this surge of energy. And suddenly people can do seemingly superhuman things. They can achieve things that would not seem possible. But it's not them really acting that out. They're kind of meat puppet of the archetype, acting out then this drama. And the dramas we have codified in mythology, meaning we can also see the ends. We see the end of the young dying god, right? We see the end of the unhappy couple in Romeo and Juliet, for example. So Jung talks about that. He says, people who are identical with an archetype can apparently stand any amount. They seem invulnerable, beyond human reach. They can do the most extraordinary things. And they don't see that somebody is getting to pay for it. And it's impossible to get away from the laws under which we were born. Somebody has to pay, either the man himself or his surroundings. His life will be cultured somewhere else. And also, an inflated consciousness is always egocentric and conscious of nothing but its own existence. It is incapable of learning from the past, incapable of understanding contemporary events, and incapable of drawing right conclusions about the future. It is hypnotized by itself and therefore cannot be argued with. So when people are caught by an archetype, they are caught by an emotion. They become unreasonable. They're unreachable. And I have here on the right Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie Wolf of Wall Street, where he is completely caught by the success. And you have this very archetypal story of the rise and the fall, when people overstep the boundaries of their humanity. And in the picture, you can see him screaming. And that's actually a pretty good sign that there's a possession taking place there. That's an emotion taking over a person. When people scream and shout, there's something very strong activated in within themselves. And people then become overbearing. They try to control the lives of other people. They try to impose themselves on others. They're then inconsiderate. Because an archetype in that sense is also very, very inconsiderate. It just wants to manifest itself. It just wants to act out. So, and Leonardo DiCaprio, he really loves playing this role. So there's a lot of movies where he's shouting a lot and suffering under his own humanity. So this is where Jung also sees the great danger of modernity. That we live now in a very, very psychological world, in the sense of he lived through World War I, World War II, and he sees then huge groups of human beings being caught by an emotion, and they try to act out a certain story. They become then very cruel also. So fascism and also communism and all these isms, all these ideologies, they are kind of within ourselves. They're kind of archetypes that then express themselves, and they can be brought forth through certain situations, certain rituals, certain imagery that comes up. There's also always associated with that. And suddenly you have these psychic epidemics that people are caught by something and they're rioting in the street and they're killing and they're looting and they're doing horrible things. They overstep the bounds of humanity. And Jung says this is archetypal. This is something that happens, that men and women and groups of people get possessed by an emotion because it's a commonality, right? This is why it's a collective unconscious. It's something that is within a big group of people, that in within all human beings. This is then why certain things pop up again and again, like dictatorships pop up again and again, and warring bands of nomads pop up again and again, and greed pops up again and again. So we need to be aware of that and look out for that and become conscious of that. Otherwise, it takes over our lives and we live them very, very impersonal lives. Not our own lives, but the life of an archetype. We act out a story which is already thousands of years old, but we are blind to it. And Jung, as he is, he always goes a step further. Everything we talked about now sounded very, oh, okay, it's very psychological. I have something within the psyche. There's something that gets triggered in my psyche through outside conditions, through a situation or an image. The question is then really, okay, what are the bounds of an archetype? Is this really then behavior? Is it imagery? Is it emotions? Or is this even that, like a part of reality, even part of the outside world, confirms and is assembled by an archetype? Same as an archetype, assembles emotion and images and behavior. He says, under certain circumstances, archetypes also let things happen outside. And this concept is called synchronicity. Those are meaningful coincidences. And he has written a book about it, Synchronicity, an A-causal connecting principle. And it's a very complicated concept, meaning that the things that are happening outside can correspond to the psychic situation that one is in. In Greek theater, this is called pathos, which means, for example, when a character is sad, that it rains and stuff, so on, and when they're in a good mood, that the sun shines. But Jung sees there that there's a lot of coincidences of psychological development that are not completely coincidental, but seem to be meaningful. And this is what he called then synchronicity. And there he also sees archetypes at work. He says, when archetype prevails, we can expect synchronistic phenomena. This means a-causal correspondences, which consist in a parallel arrangement of facts in time. So he says, when somebody dies, there are sometimes weird things happening around that time. For example, people could dream of their death, or people could become aware of it on the other side of the world. This is some dream and vision that Jung had about a friend of his, where he then later found out that it was exactly at that date. So it is kind of an archetype is felt throughout the world. And this is a really, really complicated topic in the sense that Jung sees their kind of psychic layer going through reality, and also they're manifesting certain things. So when an archetype is constellated within yourself, that kind of the outside world is also rearranging itself to give that archetype expression. This is why you then have people like Alexander the Great or Napoleon that seem to be very, very successful and seem to be, there's a lot of, like, say, lucky coincidences that go in their favor and stuff that kind of works out for them when they then act this out. So Jung saw there, again, something that is not completely a coincidence, but rather this also has a meaning. And that would bring us to a kind of summary of today's event, that what archetypes are. So archetypes can be an image, it can be a pattern of behavior or a situation, and it has to do with an expression that happens through us that can express itself then in art, in our behavior, in our lives. And in that sense, it can be then the greatest help because it can be access to ancient wisdom of the past, of humanity, how things has worked in the past, and they worked, seemingly, otherwise we would not be here. But they're also a great danger to one's personal life, that one's life is taken over by them, kind of kidnapped. And we have to find their balance because we cannot really get rid of them. They are really indispensable for life, and they are important for our psychological well-being that we are connected to them and that we're experiencing them. This is why we love art so much and music and movies and so on, because it touches something within ourselves. And this is what Jung talks about here. The appearance of an archetype in our psychology is always a moment of the greatest danger as well of the greatest hope. And I would want to thank you for listening, paying attention, and I hope you learned something about archetypes today and can find archetypes now in stories and movies. Maybe even in your own life or in the life of others, this is also a lot of fun.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. If you're interested in learning more about Jung, please check out the description.